Welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Saturday, December the 11th of 2021. I'm just getting back in the groove after a recent trip to London, England, where I was honored to speak in the Day of Special Studies for the School of Theology at the Metropolitan Tabernacle Church, where on Saturday, November the 27th, I gave three lectures on the theme, The War Against an Authentic Biblical Text. And those three lectures are now posted to my Word Magazine channel. And when I post my notes for this episode, I will provide links so you can find those videos if you would like to listen to those lectures. Indeed, it was a really wonderful trip to be with the brethren at the Metropolitan Tabernacle Church. I was honored to be there. What an amazing church. Not only is it the church where Spurgeon ministered, but has an even deeper history than that. We have the Keach Conference here in Virginia. Benjamin Keach was the pastor of this congregation. John Gill was the pastor of the congregation. John Rippon. Peter Masters, the current pastor, has been there for 51 years. So it was amazing to be there, to see the ministry of that church and to know the history of it. Not only did I speak in the conference on Saturday, I was able to preach on Sunday morning. That was a great experience. Was able to observe the ministry of the church that afternoon in their Sunday school and attending a doctrine class and attending the evening worship service. And then on the Monday following the conference and then that Lord's Day, there was a ministers' fraternal where ministers from the London area and some from southern England were there. And I was able to do two more presentations based on the ones that I had given on Saturday. So it was a really encouraging, exciting time for me. And then my family was able to go with me, and we spent a couple days after my ministry duties were complete, doing some sightseeing, and so we just had a thoroughly enjoyable time. Well, while I was still in England, I was made aware of a blog post that had appeared on the Evangelical Textual Criticism blog on December the 1st. And this blog post offered a critique of a statement that I had made in a recent podcast interview. That statement was taken out of context. The podcast interview that I had done was with a fellow named Dwayne Green. So in this episode, Word Magazine 217, I want to offer a rejoinder to this blog post and what I believe are its misrepresentations regarding the point that I was making in that podcast interview on the unity of the readings found in the classic printed Protestant editions of the Textus Receptus. I will post my notes for this episode on my blog at jeffriddle.net and also some links to some things that I will mention in the course of this podcast. So let's begin with a little bit of background. I did an interview with Dwayne Green, a Pentecostal pastor from Canada. We did the interview on November the 11th. We spoke for nearly 2 hours, maybe even more than 2 hours. Dwayne Green then took that video material, took that conversation. He edited it according to his sometimes jumpy and humorous style that he uses in his blogcast. And then he released that interview in three segments over several days. The third of those videos, and the final one, was posted on November the 29th, and it was titled, Which TR Does the Traditional Text Use? Just 2 days after the release of that third and final video, on December the 1st, Elijah Hickson, associate pastor of the Fireside Fellowship Church in Kingston, Tennessee, posted what he called a longish post on the Evangelical Textual Criticism blog, responding to a statement taken out of context, which I had made in that video with respect to the so-called Which TR objection. His post was titled, On the Comeuanaeum, Which TR, and Working from Inadequate Data. Let me begin with some observations about some general things that I found interesting about Pastor Hickson's post. And I'll cite three things that I found interesting about it. First, Pastor Hickson begins by telling his readers that he did this post, quote, only because I care about data and getting it right, end quote. He provides a link to the podcast interview that I did with Duane Green, but he only cites one statement from me in the written blog post, and even that was not cited as a direct quotation. Again, it's taken out of context from the rest of the conversation. And oddly enough, within this entire blog article, Pastor Hickson never bothers directly to mention my name or to offer any analysis of the background for the conversation in which I made the statement. This reminds me of the way a certain popular internet apologist, PIA, used to respond to my material on his podcast. And yes, I get the irony of the fact that in that previous statement, I did not mention the PIA's name explicitly. Wouldn't it make sense, however, for someone who wants to get the data right to be clear about whose work he's critiquing? Pastor Hickson also makes an odd reference later in the article to another anonymous so-called TR advocate whom he accuses of committing a supposed logical fallacy, which he calls the True Scotsman argument. This may also be a reference to yours truly, but I'm not sure because Pastor Hickson provides no name, no reference, no context for this charge. My sense is that by this comment, Pastor Hickson may, in fact, be attempting to respond preemptively to an objection that he knows that I will raise against what I believe is his misrepresentation of my quoted statement. Namely, I think he knows that my statement was made with respect to all the classic, mature, Protestant printed editions of the TR. My point was that all of the classic, mature, Protestant editions of the TR contain Matthew 6:13b, the doxology of the Lord's Prayer, Mark 16:9 through 20, the traditional ending of Mark, John 7:53 through 8:11, the woman taken in adultery, Acts 8:37, the confession of the Ethiopian eunuch, and 1 John 5:7b to 8a, the three heavenly witnesses passage or the comma euaneum, but I'll speak more on this later. Second of these three general things I found interesting, everyone who is in the TR community, those who are active in the TR community, are very familiar with Pastor Elijah Hickson. And we're very familiar with his frequent offers of online help because he only cares about the data and getting it right. I remember a conversation I had a couple of years ago with a fellow TR advocate, and he was making the observation that Pastor Hickson seems to be a nearly ubiquitous presence on all social media sites dedicated to textual criticism. And he was observing how Pastor Hickson is always so quick to offer his brand of so-called neutral corrections to anyone promoting the traditional text. Yes, he is quite a disinterested and objective observer of these things who only cares about getting the data right. He doesn't have any presuppositions. He just wants to get the data right. Third general observation. It's interesting that Pastor Hickson is apparently now listening to video and audio podcasts. Given that he linked the video interview that I had with Duane Green and he made this longish post on my comments taken out of context from it. This is interesting because in past online interactions with Pastor Hickson, when I suggested to him that he listen to my Word Magazine podcast or to other podcasts to understand better statements that I had made in context, he responded that he always preferred written content, and he said he never listened to podcasts or watched online videos because, he said, he found these hard to engage his restless and active mind. I guess his opinion and practices on podcasts and videos has changed. So with those interesting observations on things that I found interesting out of the way. Let's get down now to the nitty-gritty of Pastor Hickson's objections, and I'll just allow the readers or the listeners to judge for themselves whether or not he got the data right. So let's begin with looking at what was my contested statement. What did I say in that podcast interview that Pastor Hickson thought merited a long written article and all the research that he put into it, the time he put into it? What was the one statement in a roughly 2-hour conversation that I had with Duane Green to which he took exception? It was one statement, and I'm going to see if I can cite it here verbatim from the recording. This is what I said. Green asked me about the TR objection, or the which TR objection, and I said this, quote, "All of those printed editions of the TR included Mark 16, 9 through 20. All of them included John 7, 53 through 8, 11. All of them included the doxology of the Lord's Prayer, Matthew 6, 13b. All of them included the Ethiopian eunuch's confession in Acts 8, 37. All of them included the Coma Ioanneum, 1 John 5, 7 and 8. So the differences between them are relatively minor," end quote. And what was Pastor Hickson's assessment of my statement? Pastor Hickson declares, quote, "That statement simply is not true," end quote. He then proceeds to cite several early printed editions of the Greek New Testament that do not include some of the passages I mentioned. He cites, for example, the doxology of the Lord's Prayer in Matthew 6:13b. He says it's not in one manuscript, one printed edition, not manuscript, but one printed edition, the Complutensian Polyglot. He also says that the Ethiopian eunuch's confession, Acts 8:37, is not in the Complutensian Polyglot. And then most significantly, he gives examples of some early printed editions of the Greek New Testament that do not include the Coma Ioanneum. Notably, Erasmus's first two editions of 1516 and 1519, the Aldine edition of 1518, the Gerbelius edition of 1521, Kupfel's edition of 1524, and Colinaeus's edition of 1534. Kupfel's edition was 1524, Colinaeus 1534. He also makes reference to the fact that the Coma Ioanneum did not appear in the first edition of Luther's German New Testament, since Luther followed the second edition of Erasmus of 1519. And then he makes reference to the Coma Ioanneum appearing in brackets and in a smaller type in one early English translation, the Matthew's Bible of 1537. So that's his assessment, that the statement simply is not true. Well, what is the flaw, as I see it, in Hickson's critique of my statement taken out of context in a blog interview or a podcast interview? The basic flaw in Pastor Hickson's critique of my statement is his assumption of what I meant by the printed editions of the Textus Receptus. Granted, I should have been clearer, and I will try to do so. I will try to be clearer in the future to avoid any confusion for Pastor Hickson or anyone else. But let me be very clear in this Word Magazine 217. By printed editions of the TR, I was not referring to all early printed editions of the Greek New Testament, but I was referring specifically to the classic, mature, Protestant printed editions of the Textus Receptus, which served as the basis for the Protestant vernacular translations of the Reformation and post-Reformation eras. Another anonymous charge that Pastor Hickson levels in this article is the following. He writes, quote, "Instead of dealing with that question," that is the which TR objection, "some TR defenders seem to brush it off as irrelevant," end quote. I'm not sure if he counts me among this anonymous group of some TR defenders who seem to brush off the which TR objection as irrelevant. I did do a blog article on this very topic back in 2019 in response to a which TR critique that had been offered by Dirk Jonkin. And I have continued to expand on and clarify that response in various contexts. My friend Vince Krivda has also written an extended article on this topic. His article is titled, Which TR? A Response to Mark Ward's Critique of Confessional Bibliology. And Vince's article is on academia.edu. I'll include a link to it when I post these notes. Now, I'm sure that Pastor Hickson would want to get the data right by acknowledging these responses. But would he put me and Vince in the category of some TR advocates who seem to brush off this objection as irrelevant? I would hope he wouldn't put me in that category, but he's not very specific, so it's hard to say. If you want to get the data right, shouldn't you be specific about who you're criticizing and not refer to them in vague terms? In my 2019 blog post, I tried to offer a confessional response to the which TR objection. And I specifically clarified what I meant when I appealed to the printed editions of the TR. I want to read now an excerpt from that post as it currently stands. So this is going to be several paragraphs. This is me writing about the which TR objection and how a TR advocate would respond to variations among the printed editions of the Textus Receptus. So here's what I wrote. Quote, first, it is important to point out that there is no single perfect printed edition of the TR. This does not mean, however, that the various printed editions of the TR, taken collectively, fail to provide for us a reasonable and reliable witness to the received text. At the Text and Canon Conference, Jonathan Arnold, I'm talking about the 2019 conference that was held in Atlanta at Robert Trullo's church. Again, back to my quote. At the Text and Canon Conference, Jonathan Arnold made mention of the Trinitarian Bible Society's helpful statement of doctrine of Holy Scripture, which for the New Testament refers to the received text as a group of printed texts, adding that the scope of the Society's constitution does not extend to considering the minor variations between the printed editions of the Textus Receptus. I continue in that article. Second, we should not let the fact that such minor variations exist among the various printed editions of the TR overshadow the fact that those editions are overwhelmingly uniform, and particularly so with regard to those places where there are major differences with the modern critical text. All the classic Protestant printed editions of the TR, for example, include the Doxology of the Lord's Prayer, Matthew 6:13b, the traditional ending of Mark, the only begotten Son at John 1:18, the Pericope Adulterae, Acts 8:37, God was manifest in the flesh at 1 Timothy 3:16, the Coma Ioanneum, etc. As for the remaining minor variations, each of these should be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. If this is done, I believe that most of them will be easily resolved, while only a few will call for more careful deliberation. In that same post, I later added the following paragraph. Again, quoting myself in this 2019 article, I wrote, quote, the additions, which should be primarily consulted, are the classic Protestant ones of Stephanus and Beza, based on Erasmus's foundational work. The Elsevier editions should also be consulted, but with the understanding that they appeared after most of the translations of the TR had first been made into the modern languages of Europe, end quote. Now, given this context, and that's the end of my quotation, returning to this topic at hand, given this context, it should be clear that when I made reference in my conversation with Dwayne Green to all the printed editions of the TR, including the various passages that I mentioned, I was not speaking about every early printed edition of the Greek New Testament, but I was referring to the classic, mature, Protestant printed editions of the TR, as epitomized in those of Stephanus, Beza, and later the Elseviers. Let me briefly now review the six early printed editions of the Greek New Testament, not Protestant TRs, which Pastor Hickson cites. First, he cites the Complutensian Polyglot. This was a Roman Catholic edition of the Greek New Testament produced in Spain under the authority of Cardinal Jimenez. It is hardly surprising, then, that the Complutensian Polyglot follows the Latin Vulgate in not including the doxology of the Lord's Prayer, Matthew 6, 13b. The Complutensian Polyglot is not a classic Protestant printed edition of the Greek New Testament. Second, the Aldine edition was also produced in a Roman Catholic context in Venice in 1518. Think about this. Luther did not appear before the Diet of Worms until 1521. The Aldine edition was in 1518. It is not a Protestant printed edition of the TR. In addition, the New Testament of the Aldine edition apparently follows the first edition of Erasmus. So it's not even an independent witness for the omission of the Comae Ioanneum. Third, Pastor Hickson also cites the omission of the Comae Ioanneum from the first two editions of Erasmus, the 1516 and the 1519. Erasmus's Greek New Testament was indeed foundational for the Textus Receptus, but it was not a Protestant printed edition. We should also note that the Comae Ioanneum was included later in Erasmus's third, fourth, and fifth editions of 1522, 1527, and 1536. The standard, therefore, for Erasmus's printed Greek New Testament should not be the first two editions, which he later corrected, but the standard for understanding Erasmus should be the final, corrected, and complete editions that were later affirmed and used by the Protestant Orthodox. Given Pastor Hickson's stated emphatic desire to get the data right, surely Pastor Hickson would not suggest that I did not know that Erasmus's first and second printed editions of the Greek New Testament omit the Comae Ioanneum. After all, I published a scholarly article in 2017 in the Puritan Reformed Journal that's titled Erasmus Anecdotes. I'll include a link to it. It's on my academia.edu page. In that article, I extensively discussed the so-called rash wager legend related to Erasmus's inclusion of the Comae Ioanneum in the third edition of his Greek New Testament. And I mentioned the fact that it's not in the first two editions. So surely, if you want to get the data right, you won't suggest that I was ignorant of that. Fourth, as I understand it, Gerbelius was a humanist and not a full-throated Protestant. My guess is that Gerbelius' edition of 1521 was based on the earlier editions of Erasmus, so like the Aldine edition, it's not an independent example of the omission of the Comae Ioanneum. Fifth, Kupfel's edition of 1524 would have appeared in the early stages of the Reformation, so it was not a mature Protestant edition. I also assume that, like the Gerbelius edition, it was likely based on one or both of the early editions of Erasmus. I might add here that Pastor Hickson mentions again Luther's omission of the Comae Ioanneum in the first edition of his German New Testament, but even Pastor Hickson concedes that the Comae Ioanneum was later added to the German Bible, as indeed this reflected the Protestant consensus. The sixth manuscript he makes reference to, or printed edition he makes reference to, not manuscript, but printed edition, is the Ptolemaeus edition of 1534. And this edition as well could not possibly be classified as a mature Protestant edition of the Textus Receptus. This is another case where I'm sure that Pastor Hickson's zeal to get the data right would mean that he would not want to overlook the fact that I published a scholarly article in 2017, which also appeared in the Puritan Reformed Journal, that was titled John Calvin and Text Criticism. I'll include a link in my notes to this article that is on my academia.edu page. In that article, John Calvin and Text Criticism, I noted in particular Calvin's distinct transition from using the Greek text of Colossians in his commentaries and the writings of his early ministry to this transition, meaning he used Colossians early, then he transitioned and he began making use of the printed editions of the TR of Stephanus in his mature ministry. In my article, I lean heavily on the research of renowned Calvin scholar T.H. L. Parker, who notes that Colossians' New Testament was astonishingly modern. See page 135 in my article where I discuss this. And Parker suggested that Calvin made the transition from Colossians to the Textus Receptus under the influence of Stephanus. Perhaps Pastor Hickson would accuse T.H.L. Parker of committing the true Scotsman fallacy by concluding that Colossians' Greek New Testament was not a true Protestant Textus Receptus. Conclusion. Let's move to the conclusion. In conclusion, again, the fatal flaw in Pastor Hickson's critique of my statement, taken out of context from a podcast conversation, was his failure to draw a distinction between the early printed editions of the Greek New Testament and the classic, mature, Protestant editions of the Textus Receptus. My statement in the podcast referred to the latter and not to the former. I was referring to the classic Protestant editions of the TR and their uniformity, not to every early printed edition of the Greek New Testament. Pastor Hickson gives great weight in his argument in the article to a 1999 Quarterly Record article by G.W. and D.E. Anderson, which also appears on the Trinitarian Bible Society website, and which offers a broad survey of the early printed editions of the Greek New Testament and later printed editions of the Greek New Testament as well. And in that survey, the Andersons do indeed describe the early printed editions of the Greek New Testament in the broadest sense as editions of the Textus Receptus. Pastor Hickson does not, however, give proper attention to the focus given by the Andersons at the conclusion of this article to the later mature editions of the TR, produced by Stephanus and Beza, and especially to Scribner's edition of 1894, still kept in print by the Trinitarian Bible Society as a standard representation of the Textus Receptus. Clearly, the Andersons, the author of this article, give greater weight to the later Protestant editions of the TR as opposed to the earlier printed editions of the Greek New Testament, which served as forerunners to it. The Anderson article, in fact, makes the point that the term Textus Receptus was not coined until it appeared in a blurb in the second edition of the Elseviers in 1633. So, again, think about this for a second. The term Textus Receptus didn't begin to be used popularly in reference to the traditional text until the second edition of the Elseviers in 1633. And so it would be anachronistic to call the early printed editions of the Greek New Testament the Textus Receptus. That term was used specifically to the mature Protestant printed editions of the Greek New Testament. It would be a gross misrepresentation of the Anderson article to suggest that the Andersons or the Trinitarian Bible Society would endorse as legitimate any printed edition of the Greek New Testament that omitted Matthew 6:13b, Mark 16:9-20, John 7:53-8:11, Acts 8:37, or 1 John 5:7-8. In the end, it is interesting to consider that even without making a distinction between the earlier printed editions of the Greek New Testament and the later classic Protestant printed editions of the Textus Receptus, Hickson could find so few differences among them. Even among the earliest printed editions of the Greek New Testament, he could cite none that excluded the traditional ending of Mark or the woman taken in adultery. He could find only one that omitted the doxology of the Lord's Prayer and the Ethiopian eunuch's confession, that is, the Complutensian polyglot. And he could find only a handful of early printed Greek editions that omitted the most controversial Coma Ioanneum. And all of those are most likely based on the first two editions of Erasmus, later corrected by Erasmus himself. Pastor Hickson's study, oddly enough, actually demonstrates how relatively uniform the printed editions of the Greek New Testament, whether the early printed editions or the mature Protestant TR editions, how uniform they were until the 19th century and the rise of modern textual criticism. Pastor Hickson essentially concedes as much toward the end of his post when he states the following, quote, "At the end of the day, one could," and he puts "could" in italic, "one could argue that there was eventually a consensus and that these examples don't actually matter," end quote. What he claims to take issue with is the assertion that, quote, "TRs all agree in these major passages and they only disagree in minor places," end quote. Pastor Hickson pronounces, quote, "That claim is demonstrably untrue. There's just no way around it," end quote. Again, the problem, as I see it, is with Pastor Hickson's misrepresentation of what I meant by the printed editions of the TR. I did not mean the Complutensian polyglot. I did not mean the first two editions of Erasmus. I did not mean the edition of Colonnaeus. I meant the mature Protestant editions of the Textus Receptus produced by the Protestant Orthodox, men like Stephanus and Beza. In fact, they do share a consensus on the text. They do agree in the major passages, and they generally have only minor differences. This claim is not untrue, and there's just no way around it. Let me deal finally with what I found to be perhaps the most interesting statement made by Pastor Hickson in this entire article, and it comes right at the end of his post. He states the following. Listen to this. Quote, "If somebody wants to use a particular edition because textual criticism is hard, and they have a hard time evaluating modern text critical claims, but they trust they will be safe if they use an edition that God has used for a few hundred years, I have absolutely no problem with that." Think about that statement. Pastor Hickson is essentially saying that if you hold to the Textus Receptus, if you hold to the TR, what he calls a particular edition, you do so for three reasons. First, he says, you may hold to the TR, quote, "because textual criticism is hard," end quote. In other words, if you hold to the TR, you hold to the TR because you're lazy and textual criticism is hard. Second, he says, if you hold to the TR, those who hold to the TR do so because, quote, "they have a hard time evaluating modern text critical claims," end quote. In other words, Pastor Hickson says, if you hold to the TR, you do so because you're dim-witted. Third, he writes that those who hold to the TR do so because, quote, "they trust they will be safe if they use an edition that God has used for a few hundred years," end quote. In other words, if you hold to the TR, you do so because you are insecure. Notice also his statement here that the traditional text has only been used by God, quote, "for a few hundred years," end quote. So according to Pastor Hickson's line of thinking, God apparently used another text or texts before the TR, He used the TR for a couple hundred years, and now he's apparently moved on to yet another text. If you think that God will preserve the Word and that God keeps the Word pure in all ages, then according to Pastor Hickson, it's because you suffer from emotional insecurity. And notice the last part. If you're clinging to the wrong Bible, Pastor Hickson has, quote, absolutely no problem with that, end quote. His only concern is that you get the data right. So to sum up this last statement, if you hold to the TR, you're lazy, you're dim-witted, and you're insecure. But if you don't want to open your eyes, Pastor Hickson is fine with you living in the dark. In fact, he has absolutely no problem with that. Thank goodness we have people like Pastor Hickson defending the modern text against those uncharitable and unenlightened TR-onlyists. I think everyone listening will join with me in thanking Pastor Hickson for condescending to share his insights with us to help us get the data right. And I'll allow the readers to read his article and also listen to this podcast and draw their own conclusions about whether or not Pastor Hickson got the data right. Well, this brings this Word magazine to a conclusion. I hope this has been edifying and encouraging for those who are listening. I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next edition of Word magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.